This is Invest Talk from KPP Financial, helping investors make sense of the markets one day at a time. Here's your host, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome to the Friday, August 28th, 2026 edition of Invest Talk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and I'll be with you over this next hour as we talk about what went down in the market today, bring you the stories that matter, and try and help you make one more step towards achieving your financial goals. Now, one of the most important things we do is we answer your finance and investment questions. So before we talk about the market, before we run down our show topics, let's tackle this caller question now.
Good morning, Invest Talks. Today I'm calling about Hershey, ticker symbol HSY. It's currently about 1.8% of my portfolio, and I'm currently adding slowly to reduce my cost basis. I know they face challenges with the prices of cocoa and sugar, but please let me know what you think about the risk to reward ratio. Thank you. I'll be listening on the podcast.
Hershey, ticker HSY, the Hershey Company, is a name we actually hold in one of our portfolios that is a bit more income focused because they do have a solid dividend that they pay year in and year out. It's actually grown from about 1.7% yield to about 3.2% yield over the past couple years. And they do a good job returning capital to shareholders. Now, this company, if you don't already know, it's that iconic chocolate and snack manufacturer. So they have the Hershey bars, Reese's, Kisses, Kit Kat bars, all those delicious things that I try not to eat anymore. But that being said, some people are eating. Revenue is up 7.5% year over year. Their most recent report in July, Q2 2026, had net sales up 6.6%, which beat estimates. They had net income at $457.7 million. That was up a lot. Hundreds of percents year over year off a pretty easy prior year comparison because they had a bit of a rough year last year. And most importantly, we talk about this all the time, we had margin expansion. Because if you're continuing to make money and you don't do it at scale to the point where you can drive costs down relative to the revenue you bring in, it's not going to do much for you. So they had gross margins expand 350 bips on pricing, which was solid, though it did land a bit below the 400 bit target that they did set at the beginning of last year. Now, recently, in terms of stock performance, it's kind of been flat, right? We had a bad downward move in, looks like March was trading at 224. Momentum kind of died. It's been flat for about a month or so. Over the past 2 months, down about 9.13%. But over the past 52 weeks, pretty much no movement. Right, down 0.52%. Now, looking at the chart, I mean, it looks rough. I'm not gonna tell you it doesn't. There are some good things on its side here, right? They are legitimately delivering an earnings recovery. They have four straight quarters now of earnings beats. They have meaningful margin expansion, and we're starting to finally see cocoa deflation working in its favor. And with that, it sits at 52-week lows. I mean, it's trading near the bottom end of its valuation range. It's pretty cheap compared to where it's been for quite some time. So if you think that in the long term, in the next couple of years, at $179 with a median price target around $200-$205, that, you know, as we move into through 2026 into 2027, that this pricing power we're starting to see kind of coupled with volume stability gives you a reasonable opportunity at this value entry like we do, then certainly we think this is a solid company to invest in. But obviously a bit of short-term headwinds, and we've seen that play out over the past year or so. And at 1.8%, certainly not too big for any individual name in your portfolio. That is Hershey, ticker HSY. Thanks for the call. Well, we had a pretty good show for you yesterday. We looked into a really important story, I would say, that is fundamental for your understanding of where you want to allocate. So we talked about the dollar weakness, why it's weakening, and how this multi-month low means some pretty important things for your purchasing power. We also answered a listener question on Grab Holdings. That was an interesting one that I still need to dive into more. If you happen to miss yesterday's episode, you want to hear the answer to that question and many more, I encourage you to listen to that podcast. And remember, the best way to never miss an episode of Invest Talk is to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Now, on to today, where we will be talking about Trade War 2.0. Canada auto tariffs hit 50% and what it means for your wallet. Now, the administration made a decision to hike Canada's auto tariffs to 50% after trade talks collapsed. That marks one of the most aggressive moves yet in the ongoing U.S.-Canada trade war. So we'll talk about how this reshapes auto supply chains, raises car prices for American consumers, and most importantly, what the broader tariff escalation signals for North American economic integration. Also got a couple more stories to bring you, including one on the memory squeeze. We're seeing these hyperscalers spend a lot of money, and it's starting to show up in consumer prices. We'll also touch on the loosened antitrust stance and what that has done for markets and consolidation. Should we have time at the end of the show? Long-term care in retirement. Not a lot of people talk about it, but it can be very, very costly. We also have a couple of voice bank calls ready to play, including one on good ETFs to invest in and another on Target Corporation TGT. As well as some questions that came in from the comments section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel. And hopefully I hear from some of you live before we head off for the hopefully relaxing weekend. All right, folks, we're going into a break. As always, it's a quick one. Please remember you can call anytime and leave your questions on the Invest Talk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, I encourage you to call now at 888-99-CHART. When we come back, talk about today's market activity.
It's official. Total lifetime downloads for the Invest Talk podcast are now more than 63 million. Luke Guerrero is here now, taking your calls live. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART is the number if you got a question you want answered live. But why don't we talk a little bit about the market today? And overall, I mean, pretty negative day. You saw across the suite of indices, the market trading down. The Dow is down 2 bips, S&P down 25, NASDAQ down 52, Russell 2000 down about 1.4%. And what really led the way down is some of the names that have actually been doing well recently. You know, software gave back some of the gains that we saw on Thursday. Momentum names were weaker. Semis, memory was a bit lower. Then on the flip side, names that were doing poorly at the beginning of the week, apparel retail, department stores, banks, beauty stores. Those were some of the best performers on the day. Now, treasuries were a bit weaker. You did see the curve bear flattening, yields up about 12 basis points at the front end of the curve. Dollar up 50, gold down 2.9, silver down 3.5, and crude oil down about 20 bips. Now, honestly, not really much going on today from a catalyst perspective. It was pretty quiet. You saw that big backup in yields, which tends to weigh down on stocks. And that was because, you know, we had this Jackson Hole speech from Warsh, and it leaned a bit hawkish, certainly on the inflation side of the equation. He didn't specifically talk about rates, but he did mention his concern over the level of inflation and reiterated a commitment to the 2% PCE target. And so you saw the front end of the curve moving a bit downward, which, you know, I know the Treasury and the president, the administration would certainly like to see focus moving away from the long end, given what's been going on with the Treasury trying to beat down long-term yields. So the focus really in terms of yield movement on the short end today in light of that speech. Now, looking on the data front, August Chicago PMI posted a pretty big miss and actually fell back into contraction territory. University of Michigan consumer sentiment improved to 51.7 in August from 51, which was the flash reading expectation. BLS annual benchmark revisions was a negative 79,000. Some previews actually were hoping for some positive revisions. Certainly didn't get that. Looking ahead to next week, we have a pretty big week of data. Monday is Dallas Fed manufacturing, ISM manufacturing, construction spending, and JOLTS job openings is on Tuesday. ADP weekly private payrolls and factory orders is out on Wednesday morning, followed by the Fed's beige book in the afternoon. Challenger layoffs, trade balance, non-farm productivity, and initial claims and ISM services on Thursday. And then rounding out the week, Friday brings us the August employment report. All right, let's shift gears and take a look at a question that came in from a web form on our website. And this question is about ticker DKS, Dick's Sporting Goods. Dick's Sporting Goods. Dick's Sporting Goods, of course, the sports retail brick and mortar, pretty large company, about $11 billion market cap. It's been trading pretty poorly recently, down 31.7% year-to-date, down 40.31% over the past 3 months, down 37.19% over the past 52 weeks. I mean, it's been rough, right? They had some of the worst trading days. Actually, August 25th, looks like, was the worst trading day since 2023. And it's a pretty steep drop-off. I mean, it was doing okay. It was pretty flat for most of the year. It's trading at 183.23, and then boom, just a huge, huge drop-off. So why did this happen? Earnings, poor. They, you know, had net sales up year over year. That was driven, though, almost entirely by Foot Locker's acquisition. Earnings per share, though, down from a year ago, 471 a year ago, now 350. Adjusted non-GAAP EPS missed. And the whole story, it looks like, was really this segment divergence. You had the core business delivered pretty strong comparable sales, though a lot of that probably a big boost from the FIFA World Cup in the U.S. And so that was fine. But Foot Locker sales, not great. The company got, looks like, $60 million in tariff refunds during the quarter. That certainly was a one-off that will help, but won't help in the future. But the big reason why it fell, guidance. They lowered guidance across the board. Full-year EPS was cut sharply by 15 to 17% at the midpoint. I mean, that's pretty rough. And so anytime that happens, obviously the market is going to react accordingly. You know, in a lot of ways, it's kind of a tale of two businesses. The trading in one stock, you have the legacy business is doing well. There's genuine growth, but Foot Locker is kind of floundering here. So, I don't know what could be a catalyst here. I mean, you have back to school season, holiday comps. Hopefully being good, same store sales, hopefully being good on that front. But I think, frankly, you're just going to have a longer Foot Locker integration problem that's going to bear down on this stock. That's certainly possible. So for me, especially coming off of this cut, going to have to pass. Thanks for watching. All right, we're headed into a break. Still to come, more answers to your finance and investment questions and hopefully some live calls at 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Investing can be daunting, and doing it all by yourself can be unmanageable. The best time to get a second opinion is before disaster strikes, not after. If you've built a portfolio over the years, but aren't sure whether it still fits where you're headed, KPP Financial can help. Our team can review your current investments, identify potential risks or gaps, and give you a clearer picture of where you stand. Schedule your free portfolio review at investtalk.com. So we've covered AI CapEx a lot. I think most people have. You know, we've covered it from the software disruption angle. So I want to talk about it from a different angle, right? This is about physical pass-through into what you actually pay for consumer products, for laptops, for phones, for tablets. So Samsung, SK Hynix, Micron, they control 85 to 90% of the global DRAM production, depending on the product category. And they've shifted more than 80% of their advanced manufacturing capacity towards these high-margin HBMs, the high-bandwidth memory that is used for AI servers and server DRAM. HBM consumed about 23% of global DRAM wafers in 2026, up from 8% in 2024. I mean, it's a pretty big reallocation. And in a lot of ways, this reallocation has starved general purpose memory, the stuff that goes into your laptop, your phone, your PlayStation, your Xbox. It got deprioritized because AI memory is 3 to 5 times more profitable per wafer. And the prices really are the story. Conventional DRAM contract prices rose 90 to 95% in Q1 of 2026. NAND, NAND, the flash storage in your phone, and SSD, solid-state drives, rose 55 to 60. Consumer-grade DRAM jumped about 85% in Q2, and one specific benchmark that captures the moment, a DDR4 chip that cost $16 in April and $20 in May, hit a record $42.45 by early August. That is a 165% increase in 4 months. So you can see, this reallocation, these costs, they are flowing through to retail prices. Apple, they raise MacBook and iPad prices. PC and smartphone manufacturers across the board are either raising prices or shrinking specs in order to hold price points. And the demand destruction, you can already see it. Memory costs are projected to cut global PC shipments 10.4%. Smartphone shipments 8.4% in 2026. People aren't buying because they can't afford the new prices. So here's the part that makes this into a bit of a forecasting question rather than just a current event story, I would say. I mean, combined DRAM and NAND inventory at the big three memory makers sits at about 2 to 4 weeks of supply. So normal safety stock is 8 to 12 weeks. If you're good at math, the buffer's gone. SK Hynix's CEO actually warned in July that the shortage will probably persist well beyond 2030. Other analysts point to new capacity coming online around 2028. So we're potentially looking at 2 to 4 more years of elevated memory prices. That's not 1/4 of earnings hit for PCs and smartphone companies. You're seeing a structural shift in consumer electronics pricing. The $1,000 laptop, the $800 phone may become $1,200 and $1,000 respectively, and it's probably not going back. And the irony is worth noting. The AI boom that's supposedly going to make everything cheaper and more efficient is currently making the devices that consumers actually use to access AI a bit more expensive. The technology that is promising this abundance of labor is creating scarcity in the physical components needed to deliver it. And memory companies that are printing 80-cent gross margins are doing so by redirecting this capacity away from the products that most humans actually buy. So you can understand, when we talk about it being difficult to tackle inflation, this AI CapEx is a big reason why. Looks like we got a live call. Got James from New York. He had a question about gold.
Yes, I do. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, how can I help you?
So I wanted to know, after today's speech at Jackson Hole, could we expect maybe a pullback in gold in general, particularly in the mining companies? And if looking at the mining companies, would there be a good entry point if gold does pull back just at 5%? Is 10% even realistic in some of the miners?
Sure. Great question. I mean, you know, you, I'm sure, understand, and all of our listeners understand, because we talk about it a lot, that gold miners are essentially just a leverage bet on gold. So any gold move, gold being an inherently volatile commodity, is going to be accentuated in any of these miners. So a 10-15% pullback in these miners is absolutely possible. Now, this is just a speech from a Fed chair who, in one breath, has seemingly said, we're not going to do forecasting, and then does some forecasting. You know, this is a daily move that you can't really extrapolate onto a larger trend. I think when you're thinking about your gold allocations, the reason why we have been a net buyer in these dips is because the factors that are driving gold higher, i.e. fiscal deficits, the interest we're paying exploding on our debt, foreign governments wanting to move away from U.S. dollar denominated assets, and more importantly, kind of whittle away at the U.S.'s ability to do financial sanctions. None of that is changing. You're seeing countries that haven't bought gold in a while continue to buy gold. So yes, we could see a bit of a pullback. Am I going to extrapolate a trend from one speech in Jackson Hole from a guy that says he doesn't want to forecast? Probably not. Either way, we think gold should be a meaningful portion of your portfolio given the overall macro trends. Thanks for the call. Have a great day. All right, we're headed into come back. We got a lot to talk about here on Invest Talk.
At KPP Financial, accountability means more than advice. It means we invest alongside you. Through our parallel investing approach, when we recommend an investment for clients, one or more KPP principals invest their own capital at the same time. Same day, same price, same percentage. If your portfolio moves, ours does too. That is alignment. That is transparency. That is the KPP difference. Visit investtalk.com to get your free portfolio review.
The weekend is here, or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, the next InvestTalk, we'll look into Alibaba's $10 billion AI bet, what China's tech giants signals about the global AI race. Alibaba raised $10 billion in a share sale this week, specifically to fund AI expansion. We'll examine what this capital deployment means for the global AI arms race, competitive dynamics, and whether U.S. investors should be paying closer attention to Chinese AI. That story we will bring to you Monday, but today we got to talk about some tariffs. The reason being, last Friday afternoon, the president told reporters that negotiators had pretty much struck a deal with Canada, and then a few hours later, the talks collapsed. Saturday morning, 50% tariffs took effect on about $25-30 billion worth of Canadian goods. So your wine, hockey sticks, cement, dairy. Then Sunday, the president posted on Truth Social that all autos, auto parts, and steel from Canada would face 50% tariffs starting January 1st, 2027, adding, we don't need Canada, they need us. Canada's response was pretty fast. And for the most part, dollar for dollar, you saw Ontario's premier praising Mark Carney's response, calling the deal that was proposed a bad deal for the auto sector, the steel sector, the manufacturing sector. So I want to talk through this a little carefully, because the auto tariff piece specifically has some interesting implications that go well beyond maybe what you're thinking. It affects, yes, what you pay for when you buy a car. It affects what happens to the companies that build them. And I think more importantly, whether North American manufacturing, as we've really known it since the turn of the century, is going to survive for the next couple of years. The first place you always have to start is a supply chain. So a single car can cross the US-Canadian border multiple times during production. An engine block in Ontario is shipped to Detroit for machining, then you send it back to Ontario for assembly into a powertrain, then it goes back to Detroit for installation in the finished car. Under the current 25% tariffs, each border crossing incurs a duty on the non-US content. At 50%, that's really expensive. The auto tariff was reportedly about to be lowered from 25 to 15 as part of the deal that collapsed. And so to me, that shows both sides understand that the current level of 25%, let alone the 50% we're going to see in January, allegedly, is damaging to both parties. And the price impact on what you're paying is large. The average transaction price for a new car in the U.S. is already around $48,000. Canadian assembled vehicles from Toyota's RAV4, which is actually built in Ontario, to GM trucks, which are assembled in Canada. That's a meaningful share of vehicles sold in America. So the Center for Automotive Research did some research and got some estimates. And that suggests that a 50% tariff on Canadian vehicles and parts could add another $3,000 to $8,000 per vehicle, depending on the model and share of the content in that car that's Canadian. That's on top of the $1,200 to $2,500 in tariff costs that are already embedded from the 25% rate. And in reality, I mean, U.S. manufacturers don't really stand to benefit. American automakers don't produce cars exclusively in America anymore. You know, they all have major plants in Canada. They built those plants specifically because of NAFTA. And then later the USMCA, which was negotiated in the first Trump term, which allowed parts and vehicles to move freely across the border. So, you know, within that context, there's not really much protection of American workers. You not only would see higher costs for you, but potentially lower margins for American companies that have already invested billions in order to integrate this North American production. And that's why you're seeing some of these companies lobbying for lower rates. And I think the big question mark for me is, you know, what are these retaliation options from Canada moving forward? Right? Canada is the U.S.'s second largest trading partner. Got about $412 billion in exports last year. But the U.S. exported $349 billion to Canada. So American agriculture, energy, manufacturing equipment, financial services, they all have significant Canadian exposure. Meaning that if Canada restricts American energy imports or imposes tariffs on U.S. agricultural products, I mean, the pain flows back to American producers and consumers in both directions. This comes at a time already when the administration was saying, okay, this USMCA treaty that we signed, it's going to be wound down, right? They started the 10-year wind down. And so the costs layer in another level of uncertainty that already existed. Each escalation makes the previous status quo kind of impossible to return to. Canadian companies are already diversifying away from U.S. dependence. The EU-Canada CETA deal provides a framework for Canadian manufacturing to redirect exports to Europe. And every month that passes with 50% in place, the investment decisions that might have gone to Canadian plants serving U.S. markets goes elsewhere, to Mexico, to Europe, to Southeast Asia. So when you look at your portfolio, right, think about all of the ways that this can affect it. Auto stocks face a genuinely bifurcated outlook. So Tesla, Rivian, relatively insulated because they have primarily their assembly in the United States. The bigger guys, GM, Ford, Stellantis, these Japanese manufacturers that supply the U.S. market, they're going to have likely material margin pressure. Auto parts suppliers that source from Canada certainly can be caught. But it's a disservice to see it be something that just affects the auto industry. This was probably the most integrated bilateral trading relationship in the world. And this fracture that is happening through the auto industry is going to be widespread. Understanding how it goes beyond that sector is critical to understanding how you want to position the stocks within your portfolio. All right, let's go with a fresh caller question now.
Hi, Justin and Luke. I have a question for you, gentlemen. I currently own an ETF, VDE, an energy one. Heard you guys mention once that towards the fall here, coming up here in the third quarter, it might be a good time to get out of some of those energy stocks and funds and so forth. I have made some money on it, but with the oil situation and just the whole situation in the Middle East and that, I'm not sure what's going to be going on here. It hasn't been doing much of anything the past couple months, I guess I would say. Just been kind of going sideways, and I'm wondering if I should get out of it. And I've been looking at a couple things that have been going up very nicely this year, and especially lately in the past couple months, and that is TGT, Target Corporation, and BLBD, a bus manufacturer. Both of them have been going up and look to have good future, especially Target with their new CEO. I was wondering if you guys would give either one of these a thumbs up, and if you thought that it might be a good move to get out of the energy ETF. If I do get an energy, maybe just a straight stock would be better, I know. Thank you. I'll be listening for your answers on the show. Have a great day.
Yes, it's a great question. You know, I think that pockets of the energy sector are likely to continue to do well. I don't think exiting your energy position fully is something you want to do. I have always been an advocate of having some sort of constrained allocation to all sectors, because you never really know what's going to happen. And so you don't want to have only correlated assets in your portfolio. That's the benefit of diversification. You got to be prepared for everything. But let's take a look at these two companies. Target, ticker TGT. Of course, the large retail brand. You know, Q2 earnings beat expectations. They're launching this new beauty segment. It had a rough time before management was replaced. It's a name we hold for clients in our portfolio. One of our strategies, I think we probably got it around 105, 110. Year to date, it's up 66%, up 68% over the past 52 weeks. It is a really good example, I think, of a turnaround story. In a lot of ways, they brought on a new CEO. They've had two consecutive earnings beats now. They've had two consecutive guidance raises. They're consolidating their business a bit, moving more internal. They cut Ulta Beauty out of their business. Or not Ulta Beauty. They cut the, I think it was Sephora, out of their business. And then now they're specializing, consolidating within, internally within Target. We like this name, we hold it for clients. So Target, certainly one we are okay with and has done really well. Now, Bluebird is a name I think I got a question on a couple days ago, I would say. Bluebird is an interesting name. It's a bus manufacturer. It's ticker BLBD. And last time we spoke, the chart looked pretty strong a couple weeks ago when we were talking about it. It had just dropped off a bit. Over the past 3 months, it's down 15.61%. And it dropped off despite having a very strong Q2 print. I mean, earnings were pretty solid, but dropped off now, 19-20%. I'm sorry, 15%. Over the past 3 months. You know, I think, was this a situation where things were priced to perfection? Maybe. It's not unusual after a name has run up as much as it has over the past several years. I mean, in 2023, they're up 151%, then 43%, then 21%. Even year to date, they're still up 26%. But you're still seeing this demand for their, you know, EPA-driven EV buses for their products. And so I actually like both of these names. I'm a little more worried about Bluebird because of this recent drawdown. Let's see if it finds some support level before I'd think about entering a position there. But either way, I think diversifying is good, but certainly wouldn't fully exit out of energy entirely. Thanks for the call. Well, it's Friday, and on Friday, we generally like to fit in a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers. So let's do that right now. The two-year treasury yield is at 4.36. Last week, it was 4.23. 242 weeks back, it was 64 basis points. 10-year, 4.73, same as last week. And 240 weeks ago, it was 1.762. Gold, $44.55 per ounce. That is $158 less than last week. 56 weeks back, it was 33.48. 235 weeks ago, it was 18.06. Silver, 66.38. That is $3.17 less than last week. 133 weeks back, it was 22.80. And looking back 233 weeks, it was 23.94. Oil, 83.40 per barrel. That is $3.51 less than last week. 101 weeks back, it was 67.79. And 143 weeks back, it was 74.30. National average for a gallon of regular gasoline is 4.08, a 2 cent decrease from last week. 169 weeks ago, it was 3.56. And 217 weeks back, it was 4.25. In California, gas is averaging 5.64 per gallon, 5 cents higher than last week. 146 weeks ago, it was 5.32, and 222 weeks back, it was 5.87. For comparison, in Missouri, gas is averaging 3.82 per gallon today. That is $1.82 less than gas in California. One other thing I want to mention: the newest KPP Premium newsletter, because that is distributed on Saturdays to subscribers. This week in the KPP Insights section, we discussed why record home prices and near record low sales are keeping the housing market frozen. In the stock ideas section, we mentioned a utility company benefiting from rising power demand and a global travel company. In the portfolio management section, we discussed why sometimes the best portfolio decision is to make no change at all. Shout out to my old coworker, John Law, might still be at State Street, who said, the best trade is no trade. Then we got the Consumer Watch section. We looked at whether higher homeowner insurance premiums are actually buying better protection. If you're interested in learning more, visit us at investtalk.com and subscribe. The newsletters will hit your inbox Saturday morning. This is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero. We have one goal here: to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
This last one is a topic that's deeply personal for a lot of people. It's the kind of topic that nobody really wants to think about. And that's exactly why it is one of the most important parts of the planning conversation. And most families just aren't having it. Now, the CareScout 2025 survey, which is the most comprehensive cost of care data available, puts the national median rate for a non-medical home caregiver at $35 an hour. At 44 hours a week, that is $80,080 a year. Private duty nurse, $90 an hour. That's the median. Assisted living is approximately $5,900 a month, $70,800 annually. A semi-private nursing room, $111,000. A private room, $131,000 per year. Those numbers are rising far faster than the general inflation level. Assisted living up 10% in the last survey. Semi-private nursing up 7%. Private rooms up 9%. And a lot of the reasons why is because there's a structural change compressing costs upward. Two-thirds of home care agencies now charge the same rate for homemaker services and home health aid services. So that collapses a distinction that in the past saved a lot of families a lot of money. Assisted living occupancy has climbed from 77 to 84%, and that pressures supply. And so both of these things combine to pressure pricing as well. And there's a gap that I think keeps a lot of people up at night. 10,000 baby boomers turn 65 every day through 2030. Roughly 7 in 10 people will need some form of long-term care. And almost nobody plans for it the way they plan for college or for a house. There's no 529 for long-term care. There's no 30-year mortgage equivalent. The cost sits outside the retirement planning framework that most advisors use because it doesn't fit neatly into any model because of how personal it is. Now, if you live in California, our costs, surprise, surprise, higher than national medians. A private nursing home room in LA, $140,000 to $150,000. Home care rates are higher. And Medi-Cal, which covers long-term care for those who qualify, requires spending down assets to near poverty levels before you're eligible. And I get it. The planning conversation is uncomfortable, but it's essential. Long-term care insurance has gotten more expensive and harder to qualify for, but it's still the most direct hedge against catastrophic costs. Self-insuring means setting aside $200,000 to $500,000 specifically for potential care needs, money that sits outside your standard retirement projection. Hybrid life insurance policies offer some sort of a middle ground where the premium isn't wasted if you never need care. The worst strategy, though, is the one most people follow. Assume it won't happen to them and deal with it when it arrives. $131,000 a year for a private nursing home room. Dealing with it means liquidating retirement savings at exactly the moment you really can't afford to. And that often forces a home sale. It depletes the surviving spouse's assets, and it eliminates the inheritance that took a lifetime to build. And I'm not pitching a product here. I'm not saying one solution is the right solution for you, because again, this is a conversation you should have with your family and your advisor. I'm just stating that there's a math problem here. And if you ignore the math problem, if you haven't modeled long-term care into your retirement plan, you will likely find yourself in a situation. Hopefully you don't. Hopefully you never have to do this. Hopefully you are healthy through your life. But you can find yourself in a situation where your family and yourself are made worse off financially. Meaning, it's a difficult conversation, but it's a conversation you need to have today. All right, everybody, that does it for another week of Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. You and they can get them at iTunes and Spotify. And while you're over there, we'd really appreciate it if you left us a rate and review. One other thing I want to mention, if you haven't checked it out yet, we do have YouTube exclusive content over there on our YouTube channel. Just search Invest Talk with two T's. And if you got a question while you're over there, feel free to leave it in the comments section. Lastly, today's show made you think about your personal situation, your goals, whether or not you really have a plan set out in order to achieve those goals. I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com and schedule a free portfolio review. Justin and I speak with listeners just like yourself each and every day. It's confidential, and oh, did I mention? It's free. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Enjoy your weekend.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.